podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system, Diogis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL. Okay, welcome to another FMLFPL Fireside Chat. I'm very happy to welcome back on the pod Carl Anka from The Athletic and the co-writer with Marcus Rashford of You Are a Champion. Carl, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, you know, getting by. FPL causing me all kinds of problems, as usual.
The only way is through, which is yes. The very nice Under Armour slogan that I keep saying all the time.
Yeah, and we go again also just answers every question, right?
I use a lot of we move.
Yeah, that can be my answer, just default. We move. That's life.
We move.
So last time you were on, you were Southampton's Athletic guy, and now you've moved up in the table to Manchester United's guy, and I think we're going to spend the majority of this time talking about Manchester United.
Oh, goody.
I'm sure you haven't spent any time in the last, 2 weeks talking about Ronaldo or Ole or anything. So
now's a great time. I mean, Manchester United just played. Wait a minute, what? We lost against Young Boys.
Oh man, the youngest of the boys. Yeah, it didn't go great there. But I think just we are still an FPL pod. We should just start with Ronaldo. He's going to score a lot of goals. He's going to score a lot of FPL points. Everyone's bringing him into his team. He's divisive. He's controversial. He's box office. When we scheduled this fireside chat, United were just off of a draw with Southampton. They were just off of a win against the run-up play against Wolves, and then everything popped off. Transfer window drama. Ronaldo's in. He's the villain. He's loved. He's hated. It's everything. So how's it going so far? What do you make of it so far?
I think so on the Friday morning when it looked as if he was joining Manchester City, I, in true, cringe style, I did a tweet thread saying Manchester United have bigger things to worry about. Than an increasingly immobile 36-year-old who can't enjoy a bottle of Coca-Cola. And then I said, I can understand why it would hurt for Manchester United, for Ronaldo to join Manchester City. Because I said, Ronaldo was probably the last world-class player, the last best-in-the-world player to play for Manchester United. And he was there at a time when Manchester United were the best team, football team in the world. So,
right.
That's probably why he's fondly remembered. And the idea of there was always that half idea that Ronaldo was going to come back, right? So there were three transfer stories that have always happened with Manchester United every single year. One, Wesley Schneider is going to join United, which never happened. The other one was Sergio Ramos.
Oh, okay.
Which never happened. Sergio Ramos joining Manchester United was a United story. Basically the moment Ronaldo left in 2009. You can even check the Google trend.
Wow.
And the third one was always Cristiano Ronaldo was going to come back, right? And there were loads and loads of articles about Ronaldo's coming back. And I think every other month or every other transfer window was this whole Nike's going to part fund the deal. And I just thought it was never going to happen. So I said, I thought it's going to hurt because Ronaldo joining Manchester City would definitively end any hope he would come back to Manchester United. Right. And also the fact that it would also probably definitively end any hope that Manchester United could get to that world-class, best-in-the-world state ever again.
Right.
Because, if there was a player out there who was there the last time you were the best football team in the world and you always sort of hope he'd come back, the idea that he'd go to your crest town rivals probably means like, nope, you're never going to be the best team in the world, at least not in this way.
Right.
And I, you know, I've been, I make no hiding of the fact that I'm a man who likes, you know, Daryl Morey style squad building and slightly esoteric squad accumulation and whatnot. Yeah. So, you know, I thought, you know, I'm not too fussed about Ronaldo going away. I said I was more focused on Manchester United players and more fascinated on how Manchester United become the best football team in the world without Ronaldo, to which I'm always banging on saying, well, United probably need a holding midfielder or two.
Right.
And then, so that was me in the morning of the Friday. And then by the afternoon, Ronaldo signed. And I just went, oh, okay, goddamn.
Yeah, I feel like something that the young boy and everyone, the young Manchester United fan and everyone, sort of like our generation, came alive with that transfer, with everything just happening that way and just bringing back, like you said, the good old days, like, you know, winning the title every year, winning the treble, Ronaldo scoring, you know, crazy goals, like all that stuff just came rushing back for everyone.
Yeah, I think there's a huge, it was a huge groundswell of emotion around that deal. I think there was a number of United fans thinking, this is it. If, you know, if Ronaldo was there the last time you were the best football team in the world, and you're currently going, who's going to help us bridge the gap between us sort of like being Europa League finalists, runners up, and being one of the best football teams in the world? I can see why a number of Manchester United fans go, oh, Ronaldo's here. Now it's no more time being contenders. Now it's time to properly start winning things. I can also understand why there were, you know, slight unease about Ronaldo's homecoming, and also, you know, slight like, wait, how is this going to work?
Right.
So to this day, I mean, ever since his arrival ever since the announcement on August 27th, I've been just looking at team sheets and going, how United have so many good attacking players.
It's wild.
You begin to go, how do you fit all of them in? Right. So even before Ronaldo arrived, I wrote an article on The Athletic, which, you know, is part of our Best 11 series. And I sort of said, before I start, I want to put on my tin hat for when you get very mad at me, because even though there's so many good attacking players, that means one of them unfortunately has to go on the bench. And the one I put on the bench was unfortunately Marcus Rashford. Mm. And I think now Ronaldo's here on top. That means there's basically every single game Manchester United have now, there's going to be at least, well, when everyone's fit, every single game Manchester United have, there will be at least one high quality best of a generation or one of the better football players of their generation style attacking player on the bench, which is promising if you're a Manchester United fan. And if you're making FPL, that means, you know, now is probably the time to have at least one United player in your FPL at all times.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a bad thing to have depth, but it's definitely a puzzle for the manager. And that is where I wanted to go next, which is just, how does he fit in the team? How does he improve the team? Does he improve the team? Which I think a lot of people were kind of saying, well, Cavani is there, Green was there, you know, like, do we need this? And, you know, does he elevate Manchester United in your mind from, like you said, you know, Europa League runners up and, you know, top four, but not really title contenders? Like, does he elevate them from where they were?
Kind of.
Yeah.
So I'm often looking into this. I think this is an American sporting concept, which is basically buying wins. Or like
Wins above wins. Replacement in baseball,
Wins above replacement and whatnot. And Jadon Sancho, when he turned up at United, I was like, sweet, that is buying a lot of wins, right? Yeah. So if you look at United last season, 2020-21 season, they defended in this middle block. So the back four was halfway between the halfway line and the penalty area. Their holding midfielders with McFred mostly. So it's got Fred and Scott McTominay, broke up player and kept things rather simple. And nearly all of their attacks went down the left-hand side. So Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw, Marcus Rashford, Bruno Fernandes would all drift left. And that was doing that because they didn't have a right winger.
Right.
So it was one of Dan James or Mason Greenwood. Mason Greenwood's a striker and he drifts inward.
Yeah.
And Aaron Wan-Bissaka is... I'm gonna be mean here. I'm gonna say he's
it's okay. We're mean to him all the time.
I'll say he's a black hole in possession, right? He's not an attacking threat,
right?
To the point that towards the end of last season, it was notable that a lot of football teams were just going mark everyone apart from Wan-Bissaka,
right? Including Villarreal.
Villarreal, their whole top line was like, you know what? You can just do what you want on the right hand side because I know Greenwood's going to drift inside. Then we'll deal with him, but. That right flank, we know Wan-Bissaka can't cross the ball. We know his first touch isn't great. He's not a threat. I was at the weekend the Super League was announced. Was the game where Manchester United played Burnley.
Right.
And there was a moment where, closed door game, Old Trafford. And I heard Sean Dyche tell one of his players, leave him. Just don't get cut apart through the middle. So I thought Jadon Sancho comes in, amazing, right? So he's going to buy 3 or 4 wins because you just can't defend the United in the same way you were doing last season, right?
Totally.
Because he goes on the right-hand side and he's such a great attacking player that you probably want to not only put one player to mark him, but you probably want to get 2.
Yeah.
Which creates space for everyone else. Right. If not, Jadon Sancho can beat your other player. So I'm like, Sancho's going to buy 2 or 3 more wins. So I thought, if you looked at last season's games, the defeat against Sheffield United probably doesn't happen if Jadon Sancho's there.
Right.
There are some draws last season at home. Probably don't happen when Jadon Sancho's there.
Yeah, the draws are what I was going to reference also. It's like, you have the amazing away record, but then it's like 11 draws last season, 12 draws the season before. The pace that City and Liverpool are at, like that, you're never going to win the league at that rate. So yeah.
So I thought, Sancho, great. Going to buy loads of wins. Rafael Varane, I went, you buy some wins.
Yeah.
He's better than Victor Lindelof.
No question.
I was questioning how many more. So I think some very good analytics profiles basically said he's roughly worth 4 wins to a Manchester United team. Whereas quite a few club, quite a few statistics were not thought Camavinga would be worth 6. Mm. And I very much thought if United were going to go buy another player after Sancho, the priority would have been a defensive midfielder.
Yeah.
And to just persist with Lindelof and whatnot. So far, Varane's been fantastic.
Yeah.
He's played a lot of football very quickly. And he is so quick and so good at delaying and marshalling the space. That's not been a problem. Ronaldo comes in and you're going, wait, what?
Right.
Now, we know for a fact Manchester United didn't plan to bring back Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right, yeah.
Solskjaer has admitted this already. Part one reason why they went for it is because City, they thought Manchester City were going to go do it. You know, we know for a fact, Alex Ferguson basically called up club officials at United and went, raised hell and said, you absolutely cannot let this happen. I think the term was, there'll be hell to pay.
Oh my God.
So this was, on a logistical term, that's amazing, right? It's amazing. Watching all the cogs click into gear very, 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 very quickly to get a player of Ronaldo's talent, which makes you wonder, well, why have you not done this when other very good football players have been available?
Right.
But never mind. But it's that thing of Ronaldo buys maybe 2 more wins that you wouldn't have seen last season.
Yeah.
I think the good thing about Ronaldo is it probably brings an end to any... Oh no, we're just waiting for Martial to get his shooting boots, right?
So, right.
Solskjaer's been very kind to Anthony Martial. He very clearly wants Anthony Martial to come good. He's still giving Anthony Martial game time, despite the fact that Martial's in some of the worst form of his life. But also now, it's not a case of Cavani can't play. We'll have to rely on Martial. Fingers crossed Martial comes good. It's just, Cavani can't play. Ronaldo's going to play instead, which Ronaldo's a better striker than Anthony Martial. He's probably a better striker than Edinson Cavani.
For sure.
Not everything, but there's definitely 4 or 5 things where we know Ronaldo is better than Cavani.
Yeah.
And it just means in the games that Cavani can't play, which there will be there will be 3 or 4 because he's very much listens to his body. He's ultra professional and he can't, I'm not going to say he can't play 2 games a week, but if he doesn't think he can play 2 games a week, he will tell you.
Yeah.
And then there is nothing you can do about that. because he's not the sort of football player to take painkillers to play a game of football. That's his prerogative and all power to him.
Fair enough.
So Ronaldo solves that sort of problem as who's going to play striker in games that Cavani can't, or indeed who's going to play games ahead of Cavani. It does cause questions as to, is Mason Greenwood going to have to spend the entire season on the right-hand side, or is he going to be able to play those games as a number 9? I think Ronaldo also opens up the door to United playing more with the front two, if that works. Because, I mean, theoretically, that'd be quite fun.
Mm.
You know, Cristiano Ronaldo playing up front next to Marcus Rashford with a runner would be quite interesting. Anthony Martial, you know, Martial loves a 1-2, even though he probably loves it too much and it's quite obvious where it goes, but it's fine. So that is potential. And I'd also be interested to see Ronaldo playing up front with Mason Greenwood as well.
Right.
So that's potentially interesting. And that probably offers new attacking ways, formations or whatnot. He's gonna score a lot of goals. He's probably gonna
score
20.
That's the thing, right? Because I don't think anyone, Manchester United fan or not, thinks that Ronaldo helps balance the team or fixes a need in that, you know, sort of FIFA, I need this position, I'm gonna buy this guy type of
This is the question,
thing.
Right? So we've just seen this happen at Juventus, right? So Juventus years and years and years getting closer to the Champions League. Yes. Right. So they lose to Real Madrid in the Champions League to Ronaldo. Go. They lose to Barcelona and they're going, they just need someone to bridge that gap and win the Champions League. And they went, you know what? Let's go out and buy the guy that knocked us out of the Champions League to Ronaldo. And they got worse.
They finished fourth or something.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. And it's that. And it's, I'm not going to say it's because of Ronaldo. I will say Ronaldo still scored, you know, 20 goals. He still was one of the highest, but, you know, still was one of the better strikers in the world, still scored a lot of goals. But the manner in which Ronaldo scores goals, he's a very ball dominant attacker now, right? So he can drop deep and into play and do quick 1-2s, but his hold up play is not on par with some of the better players with their backs towards goal. You know, he's not Romelu Lukaku, who ended up dethroning Juventus within Milan. The way I'll put it nicely is Cristiano Ronaldo now applies the punctuation mark at the end of a sentence when I'm writing a story about how a goal happened, right? So I go, Dybala did this and this and this and this and this, and then came Cristiano Ronaldo, and an exclamation mark or whatnot and whatnot and whatnot. Yeah. It's less of the goals we used to have in 2008, 2009, 2010, where Cristiano Ronaldo did this, juke this guy, did this, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And Juventus eventually became unbalanced, not just because they had to keep supplying Ronaldo with crosses, with passes, with a lot of movement to get those goals, but also because Ronaldo's salary was so big.
Right.
They had to let go of players that helped that side become balanced, both in the first team and in squad depth. Now, Manchester United don't necessarily have the salary issues.
Yeah, they seem okay there.
They seem okay there, but there will be the question of, can you supply Ronaldo with what he needs? So it's working out so far. You know, Paul Pogba, fantastic dynamic passer. Yeah. Bruno Fernandes, a man chronically addicted to passing the ball forward. So we're going to get that. But there were moments in that game against Newcastle where Ronaldo's going towards the back post where he loves to get those headed balls in. And Wan-Bissaka's trying to, you know, stood on the ball trying to get across it. And that cross isn't coming in because Wan-Bissaka's not that kind of player.
Yeah.
Or what you saw in that defeat against Young Boys where once United go down to 10 men, Cristiano Ronaldo, who is 36 years of age and while still very, very quick, is not perhaps the most explosive forward anymore.
And he doesn't press and do all those things you need when you're down a man.
He's the, you know, he was in the bottom 2% of pressers in Europe last season. Worth mentioning, Anthony Martial was in there too. But it became that thing of when you're down to 10 men, Cristiano Ronaldo's probably not the player you want to lead the line. You probably want someone like Lukaku, or you probably want someone like Mason Greenwood. Or you probably want someone either lightning quick, very good with their back towards goal. And this is not a comment on, I am not saying these football players are better than Cristiano Ronaldo. I am saying if you are down to 10 men and you are 1-0 down, you probably want someone like Olivier Giroud as the guy up front. Because you can just punt it long and he's gonna hold the ball up and he's like, right, all right, I'm gonna put all these guys in headlock and I'm going to wait for these midfielders to come up and get the ball.
And what I thought you were going to say is you want Dan James. And I'm not being facetious. Like
Dan James would have been perfect for that game.
You want Rashford and James countering. Like that, right? Is that not perfect? Like long balls over the top, they're running onto it, that you can't stop that. Which is another issue, I guess. But yeah, Ronaldo, good player. Goals are coming.
Goals are coming. It's the
goals are good.
He's going to score 20 to 25 goals. It's what how do United supply him with enough shots to get those 20 to 25 goals? I think that'll be okay. I think there's enough passes to do that.
Yeah.
And it's also the fact that, is he getting those 20 to 25 goals at the expense of someone else? Which, it's his own question. Mason Greenwood started the season well as well. So I don't think he's going to completely unbalance this team. I don't think he's going to unbalance this team any more so than, say, Anthony Martial was last season, or say Edison Cavani was during parts of last season, where Cavani was going, no, you need to give me some crosses, rather than what they were doing previously, which was mostly playing on the deck.
Right.
But that'll be the thing. And it will be a... And you can notice by the pause, because I'm trying to figure out, it will be a net positive, but I'm not sure if the 20 goals Cristiano Ronaldo is going to score this season in the league is what will take Manchester United from the 76 points they finished last season with to the 86, 90.
I was going to say 96, between Chelsea City and Liverpool,
Between Chelsea City and Liverpool, I think anyone who's going to win the league will probably need 86 points minimum.
Yeah, I think even more, honestly.
Yeah, 86 to 90 points, and then we can start saying you're going to win the league title. And I think if you look at last year's, the 76 points last year, and the way United drop points, I can say Jadon Sancho means you don't lose against Sheffield United. Rafael Van means you don't draw against Everton, and you don't draw against West Bromwich Albion. Cristiano Ronaldo means you probably beat Arsenal. That still doesn't take you up to 86.
Right. That's plus 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's an interest. And I mean, this all leads me into a bigger maybe talking point, which is the manager, which is, you know, the actual implementation of all these players that we're talking about and the systems, and, you know, how is he actually using Sancho? Is he using it in the way that you imagined when you were so excited that they transferred him in? Like, so far, I would say not really. How is he going to implement, you know, when Rashford comes back? Is he straight back in? Is that a mess? You know, is he going to be able to drop Ronaldo when maybe Ronaldo needs to be dropped? And how's the midfield going to work? There's so many questions, I feel like, with how the team is actually going to play versus just looking at all the players and saying, like, well, they have a lot of really good players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ever hear this coaching adage of so-and-so is a nice problem?
Yeah, good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have, right? Yeah. So, and, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has often spoke about his goalkeeping situation. It's a good problem he has David De Gea and Dean Henderson going head-to-head, and he hasn't quite decided number one. The problem with coaching good problems is that if you don't make a decision, they eventually become problems.
Right.
And if you keep waiting, they eventually become bad problems.
Right.
So the goalkeeping situation last season was a nice problem to have. Dean Henderson was back. He was really young and hungry, and he was either going to push on David De Gea to improve, or he was going to replace David De Gea entirely.
Mm.
And this is a nice problem. And Solskjaer plays it really well in that De Gea needs paternity leave because he's just had his first child. And Solskjaer's like, okay, bye. And he's like, Henderson, Dino, you're in now.
Yeah.
Dean Henderson, unfortunately, isn't spectacular as a goalkeeper, right? He's good.
Yeah, he's good.
He's good. He offers things that De Gea can't do, right? So United don't play with an offside trap until Henderson comes in and basically creates an offside trap because he's constantly yelling. And he's a bit more confident. And you're going, okay, all right. So this is not, you know, he's solved a nice problem. He's no longer a problem. And then you get the Europa League final and he starts De Gea and you're going, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
you've made a problem there.
I can't believe you've done this.
Right. And this is, you know, this is in part because Dean Henderson had a couple of slip-ups towards the end of last season. And De Gea was very calm, very just like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to make any noise. I'm just going to wait my turn because my turn will come up. But Solskjaer's flip-flopping turned a nice problem into a problem.
Which eventually
caused a headache that, for depending on your viewpoint, is the reason why United lose that penalty shootout and lose the Europa League final.
Right.
United should have put that game, should have had a different game plan and should not have let that game go to penalties. But you can see how the nice problem changes there.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he kind of has a nice problem at right back at the moment. So he's got Aaron Wan-Bissaka. We all know about his skills at defensive things and basically allows United to play with this attacking front five.
Yeah.
And or six when Luke Shaw bombs up because he knows that Maguire is really going to use 1v1s. Bahrain's really good in these 1v1s, and Wan-Bissaka's really good in these 1v1s. So that's a nice problem, right? And it's that thing of either Wan-Bissaka kicks on and learns his attacking stuff, or, you know what, we'll bring on Dalot and see if Dalot can offer something. And if Dalot can, then they've got something in attack, right? That's a nice problem. You see how very quickly that can become a problem if neither Dalot shows the defensive stuff you need or the attacking stuff, how Wan-Bissaka doesn't improve. And I think you can see this again. There's like a similar nice problem right now with Jadon Sancho, right? Nice. Jadon Sancho can play on the left-hand side. You can probably also play as a number 10. It's a nice problem that Sancho can play on the left-hand side, and it's played on left-hand side yet. But also, the whole point of buying Jadon Sancho is to put him on the right. So
fix the right-hand side. Yeah.
So like, Solskjaer, can you just
do the thing?
No more nice problem. Just pull the trigger. I think Sancho will come good. I think he's had a disrupted preseason because barely any game time of the Euros. He also was ill after the tournament and turned up to preseason slightly later.
Right.
He didn't look match fit before the international break, and then obviously he pulled out of England duty over the international break as well, and he's still there or thereabouts. I was very excited to see him play against Young Boys, especially because he was on the right hand side.
He was on the right. Yep.
And then when Wan-Bissaka gets sent off and Solskjaer takes off Sancho to play Dalot, I was very much like, nevertheless. which I think the Wan-Bissaka red card was really painful because I was really excited to watch Sancho on the right-hand side, and I was really excited to watch Donny van de Beek get some game time. And they both had to be sacrificed because of the red card. And going, oh, this is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. I feel like when new managers come into a side and, you know, they get credited for a new manager bounce or whatever that means, I think a lot of the time they just end up doing the most simple, obvious thing that every supporter of the club wants. You know, I'm just going to play all of these guys. I'm going to put them in the right positions and we're going to be a little bit better. And everyone's just like, see, you know, and sometimes when you're at a club too long or, you know, too many people telling you different things and overthinking things like me and FPL, You create problems that don't exist, and I feel like that's kind of where you're going with this.
The thing
stuff.
I think a lot about was interim Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comes in December 28th, his first game against Cardiff City. They win 5-1, right? And the entire Mourinho tenure, they don't score 5 goals, and Solskjaer does that in his first game. And I remember it was BT Sport just afterwards, and Wayne Rooney was there in a very nice turtleneck. And they asked him, what have you noticed there? And he goes, well, the thing I see is that Solskjaer's United are attacking with 4 players, whereas under Van Gaal, we were attacking with 2 players at a time, and we always had to take a touch. We couldn't shoot the ball. Yeah. And under Mourinho, we were attacking maybe 2. You know, it was the guy crossing to Lukaku or passing to Lukaku, and that was it. Whereas I was like, all of you, go.
Right.
And that worked, right? That worked on this interim spell. Yeah. And there was definitely a point during that interim spell where it was looking really good. Then they have their first defeat against PSG, and you're going, it's fine. I mean, he's an interim manager and he's faced a team with much better players. It happens. And then he had the league defeat against Arsenal. You're like, it's kind of been coming because United have been overperforming like she.
Right.
There was that game against Tottenham where De Gea makes something like 14 saves at Wembley, and you're going, like this will run out. Everyone's going, the stats nerds are going, this will run out. They probably shouldn't make Solskjaer manager, and they should stick to their plan, which was when Mourinho left, there was a statement saying, we're going to get an interim manager, we're going to get a permanent, and then in the summer, we're going to get a permanent manager and a director of football.
Right.
And then what happened was they just made Solskjaer the permanent manager and then didn't get a director of football ever.
The PSG second leg happened.
Yeah, right? Which was completely unexpected and was really good. But also sort of went, well, you kind of got given the job now. Which, at the time, made sense. There was such a groundswell of emotion that the club officials would have been very silly to not do it. I can also say, on a financial point, it was cheaper to get Solskjaer than to go off and get another manager. And to his credit, Solskjaer has done really, really good work in this almost 3 years. He's been Manchester United manager. There have been dips. There have been definitely points of time where you go, this guy's done.
Yeah.
But Solskjaer has, the way I've put it is, there are loads of times in football where I'm watching Solskjaer United and I'm going, if you keep trying to play football this way, you're going to lose badly. And it's going to be terrible. Like, you need to stop doing it this way.
Yeah.
And every time I am approaching that critical mass, Solskjaer does something to change the this way. Now, one of the times he changed it this way was, well, here's this guy called Bruno Fernandes, so we're going to do this way, but quicker with a better. We're going to do this way quicker and with a guy who's not Andreas Pereira.
Buying super expensive good players can do that.
Buying super expensive players can make you sure you can keep doing this way.
Yeah.
And I think it's only now that Cristiano Ronaldo, Jadon Sancho and Rafael Varane has arrived that, you know, they've hit this sort of critical mass where you're going, okay, well, you can't really improve in any more positions.
Right.
You gotta sort of change the this way now, otherwise things get really bad. And look, and this is probably why I'm clamoring for a defensive midfielder, because that's probably the next way you change the this way if you want to keep playing football, is you get a better defensive midfielder to play next to Paul Pogba. Or you get a better Nemanja Matic, or you get a better Fred, or you get a better Scott McTominay, or you get a better Wan-Bissaka. But that's it now, right?
Yeah.
Or you get a better goalkeeper. There's maybe three positions where Solskjaer can keep doing the, well, spend more money, because eventually you're going to go.
Yeah, it's like a constant catch up. It always feels like I sense that from, you know, fans on Twitter or whatever, and our Discord, and people just being like, yeah, we're just, you know, so-and-so away. We're this guy away. We get this guy, we're going to challenge. And it's just, at some point, you got to just do the stuff and get the points and stop being inconsistent. And from what I can tell, I feel like the majority of Manchester United supporters really like Ole and really support Ole and mostly want him to stay and think he's doing a great job. But supporters of the other top four clubs mostly think he's basically a caretaker manager and they're not going to win anything with him in charge. And I don't know where it really lies. Like, it's probably somewhere in between there, and maybe we won't know until we're looking back after everything's done. But I'm just curious, like, what's your current barometer at for Ole? Like, is it, do you, yeah, it's a hard question to ask.
I've just taken to describing them as Ole's business casual reds. Right, so shout out to Tosin, Nigerian Scams, who you know coined the term unserious. Right,
yeah.
So there are serious football teams.
Yeah,
there are serious football teams. There are good football teams.
Yeah,
there are bad football teams, and there are unserious football teams.
Right,
and Manchester United are very unserious.
Gotcha.
And they've slowly stopped mucking around and got vaguely serious. But I keep saying they're probably business casual. Right, they're smart casual. You know, if Manchester City and Liverpool are wearing suits, Ollie's got a decent pair of slacks, maybe some flip-flops. He's got a blazer, but he's not wearing a shirt. And you're like, okay, like, fine, you can probably get into the restaurant.
Yeah.
The restaurant being the Champions League spots, whatever.
Yeah.
But you're like, they're not putting you front of house, right? They're probably going to hide you in the back.
Yeah.
And there was a point after United get knocked, so just after United get knocked out of Champions League last season, after RB Leipzig, I was going, this is, that was a proper, like, you can't do this anymore. Like, this is your limit. You can't continue. And then United go on a great run, right? They run up, they end up in January top place. They aren't there for too long, partially because Paul Pogba gets injured, but I'm going, you know what? This is fun. And I've spent, you know, United fans have spent so long on the Van Gaal, Mourinho and Moyes down bad, that there was definitely a point where I went, this is a decent team. They play entertaining football. There are definite shortfalls, but I am enjoying watching this now.
Yeah.
And as the season went on longer and longer and longer, I didn't have to squint as hard to figure out what on earth Solskjaer is doing.
Right.
And there were some frustrating results, but I went, but, and especially towards the end, I went, and I had the same thing of, you can't keep playing this way. But I knew the transfer window was coming up and that this way would change. Like, players were coming in.
Improved.
And he, so this, so, you know, I come into this season going, you know what? Sancho's here. Play the same way, because Sancho's on the right hand side. So it's going to open up so much space, baby.
Yeah.
And then Varane turned up and went, okay. I mean, that improved something, but like, I kind of want the defensive midfielder still.
Yeah.
And the defensive midfielder doesn't turn up. I went, I mean, this is very business casual. But if they've, you know, I thought at the start of the season, I thought if Manchester United finish, like, you know, perfect world, best case scenario, Manchester United consolidate their place in second. Sorry, best case scenario, obviously, is United win everything.
Right.
my, you know, best case realistic what is likely to happen was United probably consolidate second position, right? They're like, boom, we are the second best team in here. No more ifs, buts, or whatever. We are a consistent top four place. I'd have been, you know, I think at the start of the season, I thought Champions League quarterfinals, very reasonable expectation. And I thought if the cup run, if the cup draw was easy, they might be able to nick a FA Cup or nick, a, nick a League Cup. Because I think one thing, Ollie's had some very bad... It's like, oh, Manchester City again. Chelsea again.
The draws are everything in this competition. Yeah, part of, so, part of the reason I think I have very little interest in any of them.
So I thought, you know, second, consolidate second place, Champions League quarterfinal, and then... best, like super best case, you win one of the domestic cups. And I thought, I can, even one of the domestic cups, I'll be happy with second place, 82 points and, and a quarter final. And I think United are, you know, I think United probably will get 80 points this season. I think that defeat to Young Boys is going to be, well, how are you going to get out of the group now? You better go out and beat Young Boys. You better go out and beat everyone else now. So that'll be fun. I did joke, sort of, oh, I guess Ollie wants to do third time's the charm with the Europa League.
I mean, it does seem like, from, again, you know, not a Manchester United supporter myself, it does seem like there's a constant way overreaction to everything also, which is...
This is the thing with all big clubs, of course.
I mean, Young Boys, it sucked. They went down a man. It's embarrassing, whatever. Liverpool lose group games. Like, City lose group games. Like, it doesn't matter, really. You know, for as a Liverpool supporter myself, if we lose to AC Milan today, it's not like, I mean, of course, AC Milan's better than Young Boys, but I'm not like, oh my God, we're screwed. We're not getting out of the group. Everything's a disaster. But that's all I'm seeing with the Young Boys match. All of Twitter is just alight with like, oh, again, like fraud, like not getting out of the group. I'm just like, yo, chill.
I think a lot of this also becomes from the unspoken element to a lot of it, right? So I am constantly going, Manchester United need to buy a new defensive midfielder, because what I'm actually saying is, if Manchester United want to keep playing this way, you need a defensive midfielder.
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, what? But why do you think that? Because I'm also going, Manchester United probably aren't going to stop playing this way, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer doesn't really seem to have any other ideas.
Right.
Which, you know, at some level, I'm like, that's fine. Just go out.
Sure.
You know, I'm very much like, Ollie, that's fine. If you want to be tactics light or tactically fluid, go for it. You do need the defensive midfielder, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And I think that's why you see some of these massive overreactions, because they're not saying the quiet part loud. They're saying the loud part loud and then hiding the whatever bit. Which, so when they're like, oh God, we've lost the Young Boys. United aren't going to wait to get the Champions League group. It's because you're also going, I don't trust Ollie to beat Villarreal again.
Yeah, it's all the other anxieties come popping up with with a one bad result or whatever.
I'm kind of really scared Ollie's going to lose at Atalanta away from home, because they're really rapid on counterattack. That's the quiet bit.
I got you. I hear you. That makes sense to me now.
And I hope that's what's going on, right? And I think what's also... this is the problem with a lot of football, right? And a lot of all team sports, is that you have a window. You have a window, you know, you get a championship window, right? So you probably get 3 to 5 years where you core your team. So to look at basketball right now, there was a 3 to 5 year stint where it looked like the Houston Rockets could probably win a title.
Right.
And they missed it because Chris Paul had an injured hamstring in 2018. And now they're tanking, right? It's 2021. They're actively tanking. And when you get that call, you can extend that window by getting better players, tweaking changes, bring in new managers. Or if you don't do those things, the window shuts, you lost a turn. So Pochettino's Spurs have a window between 2016 and 2018 to win something.
Yeah.
And then they didn't buy someone for a calendar year. And you're like, ah, buddy.
Yeah.
And Ollie's kept extending his window because he keeps buying good players. But also everyone's going, you're hitting. Liverpool aren't going to go away. City aren't going to go away. Right. These ones aren't going to go away. And it's good. I think United now have dealt with the challenge from the North London clubs. Those two teams have fallen away in the top four race. Leicester City are maybe thereabouts. So we're like, yeah, cool. Well done, Ollie. Yeah. You've gone from duking it out in the Europa League to getting that Champions League. But also that means, Ollie, you can't win the Europa League no more.
Right.
right? He missed
the expectations keep going up. Like, as you extend the window, the pressure goes up and the expectations go up. And
Ollie's missed his window to win a Europa League. He probably should have made some changes in that single elimination game against Sevilla in 2019.
Right.
That game was winnable. Very winnable.
Right.
It was very obvious from, say, the 60th minute that United didn't really have a plan other than Martial and Rashford just dribbling on the ground. And you're going, so, you know, bring on Ighalo, start using his hold-up play, maybe put some crosses in, whatnot. And I just kept going and it wasn't working.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have the final against Villarreal. And after that final against Villarreal, you're like, well, you've qualified for the Champions League now. If you end up in Europa League next season, you have a problem.
Yeah, right.
So he's missed that. He's missed that Europa League window, which is, again, that fear of, okay, was that weird thing of expectation where if I told you at the start of this season, hey, you know, the time portal opens up, United are going to win the Europa League. I go, wait, what happened?
Yeah. That's not good enough anymore.
Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's crazy how much that changes. Because before last season, in an alternate universe, if you were to say Manchester United finish second and win the Europa League, you're like, we're flying. You know, we're on the way up. We're clearly showing signs of improvement.
You're a bit confused as to what you're going, wait, the Europa League again?
Yeah, a little bit confused, but it's still again.
But you also go, hey, we won. Whatever.
We won and we got second.
Yeah.
Incredible. That means we beat out one of City and Liverpool to second. But yeah, things change, you know. So a lot of, that's why you're here. A lot of action. A lot of action. You mentioned the keepers. I wanted to just touch on that. I mean, Hendo, you know, was obviously the guy last season, like we talked about already. De Gea's come in and started, I think, every game this season so far. How do you see that shaking out? Is he now just the guy? Like, is Ole just, you're my guy now? And
I'm giving you a big shrug, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
So the big reason why this is now a nice problem again is because Dean Henderson tested positive for COVID-19.
Right.
And missed the majority of preseason. So he missed the training camp in Scotland and whatnot. And is, you know, I think he played in the under-23 game last week.
Right.
But that's the first sort of 90 minute bits of action he has. And he didn't travel as part of the Champions League contingent this week. So it's gone back down to a nice problem.
Henderson
will essentially, you know, Henderson will hopefully recover from COVID-19 and regain full match fitness. And then it'll be a problem again because, and I've mentioned this two or three times, everyone knows now you need to shoot early against David De Gea.
Yeah.
Right? David De Gea's great strength throughout that 2015-14 pomp where he's winning four Player of the Year's awards at United and whatnot. When he puts in that 2017-18 season, which is the greatest season a goalkeeper's ever done in Premier League history, right? United don't win a title, but it's like the greatest, statistically speaking.
It covered every deficiency in the entire team and management. Yep. He covered literally everything.
Right? So Jose Mourinho will constantly say, my greatest achievement was finishing second with that Manchester United team.
Yeah.
Mourinho did not do that.
That is not
Mourinho's achievement. That is David De Gea playing out of his skin by nearly every single conceivable metric.
Yeah.
Manchester United should have finished fifth.
Yes.
That season. The difference is David De Gea went Super Saiyan 4.
Yeah.
And was saving everything.
Everything.
Right?
Yeah.
And then he became human again.
Yeah.
Because you get knackered, you get figured out. And if you're in the thing about, there was this really great video I once watched about the difference between the regular season in the NBA and the playoffs. And this coach was saying, when you're in the regular season, fine, whatever, you're all good. But the moment you reach the playoffs, every single opposition scout goes, what's the thing you're really good at? And they go, take it away from him.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're good at shooting, you know, catch and shoot, on the dribble, we're going to force you to dribble, right? It's a thing, just like, it stops going from, oh, this guy's really good at this. We're like, here's a warning. It's whatever he's good at, don't, under any circumstances, let him do that.
Well, it's sorry to cut you off, but I just remember I had Michael Cayley on a while ago after the Mo Salah's first season for Liverpool. He scored, you know, whatever it was, 34 goals, I think. And it was just like, oh my God, we have the best player in the universe all of a sudden. And I remember asking him, like, you know, why, from like the statistic point of view, why isn't he going to do this again? You know, like, why isn't it possible? And one of the, you know, to put it in like the most layman's terms ever, is because no one ever does it again except Messi. And that's why he's Messi. Like, but the first time Messi had a Messi season, everyone was saying, well, he's not going to do that again. And then he just did it. And then I was like, well, he's probably not going to do that again as he gets older. And then he just did it. But, you know, De Gea just had a supersonic year. I mean, that just happens sometimes. But no, people don't just do that every season. Like, that's reserved for the only the greatest of all time.
Because the league catches up with you.
Yeah.
Right, the league's supposed to catch up with you. You're supposed to get older. You're supposed to get wise. You're supposed to get tired.
It's normal.
And it happens in the course of the season. And what happened was, De Gea got figured out, right? De Gea's great strength in that season was his legs. He had this long back. He had this sort of octopus technique where one-on-one, he'd rush up against you. And when you're trying to figure out your shot, he'd get really big. And then he'd jut out a leg.
Yep.
Classic. And he'd make that save.
We all know the De Gea save. Yeah.
Right. And then what went around the league? The league went, shoot before he does that.
Mm.
Right, shoot before he sorts his feet out. Like, under no circumstances allow him to get set and then make that shot.
Right.
So just all of these long range pingers just went in because I was like, whoa. Like, whoop, De Gea doesn't look ready. Shoot now.
Not fair.
And what should have happened under late stage Mourinho, what should have happened on the Solskjaer was the manager would have gone, De Gea is not able to save these shots. The entire back four and the defensive midfield, you stop these shots at the source.
Close them down.
Like, if anyone looks like they're going to rev up a long range shot, you clamp down on them.
Yep.
And they didn't.
Yep.
So then not only do you have the thing where a lot of these goals were going top bins out of nowhere, but you're having the thing where they were going to De Gea. De Gea was sort of spilling it. And then someone was getting the tap in, and you're going, oh, it's another De Gea mistake because De Gea was parrying.
De Gea howler,
De Gea howler because De Gea was parrying it back into goal. But you're also going, no, like, come on. One of you. Just be alive to the spillage. And this, and the, more so than any other position, goalkeeping is, once you get figured out, they're going to do that to you all day.
Yeah.
And you better adapt or die. And the problem with goalkeeping is it doesn't even necessarily have to be true. Right, and you are seeing it now constantly when you watch Manchester United and De Gea's in goal. Players are shooting early to this day, right? So Nick Aiding scores in that league game. There was a moment against Young Boys where one of the guys just like got on the boards, went, De Gea, bang.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it goes in, then it confirms the bias that De Gea can't save long range.
Even if he saves the next 20 of them, the 21st goes in, everyone's saying the same thing.
It just keeps going and it keeps going, right? So one reason why Joe Hart is now playing for Celtic is because everyone figured out he can't save shots low into his left.
I didn't know that. I just thought he got bad. I didn't know there was a specific reason.
He got bad in a very specific way.
And
once everyone figured it out, it became magnified and magnified and magnified, and everyone stopped trying to shoot in all directions. And that was the Hayes thing. So the Hayes last season was, you got to figure out this long shot thing. You got to learn how to be louder and yell at everyone else.
Yeah.
And you got to learn to make some, you need to learn how to play with your feet. De Gea knows how to pass with his feet more so than last season. He was a lot more confident in some games, but he also had some failings. So the game against Leipzig, Justin Kluivert gets that shot where, you know, De Gea probably should have made himself big like a bear. And it was quite telling that the week afterwards, Dean Henderson has a chance and Dean Henderson just smothers the guy.
Right.
Which was a very much a Henderson, like, give me the number one.
Yeah.
But also Henderson has his own things, right? So Dean Henderson spends the entire season at Sheffield United. And then is in goal against Sheffield United last season. Chris Wilder just basically goes, swamp the 6-yard box on corner kicks.
Yep.
Just pin him down. Don't let that.
Make him uncomfortable. Like,
yep. And then that went round the league. So there were more games throughout last season where Dean Henderson was in the corner and they were just guys on his tiptoes, just like, I'm not going to let you move.
Yeah.
So Henderson has to deal with that one. How do you beat that one? And there are some very nasty ways you can deal with that. Or you can have... You can talk to Harry Maguire over him, but like, this guy is standing on my tiptoes. Can you beat him up for me?
Yeah, deal with it. Cool.
At this point in time, I think Henderson can do things De Gea can't do. And even though Henderson isn't perfect for what United want to do, I think Henderson should start over
the
head.
Probably the way forward. Yeah. I'm with you there. That's probably about enough Manchester United, right? I think we went there a little. Do you want to touch on FPL at all? Are you playing this year? How's your team looking? What's going on?
I am playing. Yeah. I have let me look right now.
Let's check out your team.
I've got two Manchester United players in here.
I'm going to imagine that it's Greenwood and Ronaldo.
It is Greenwood and Luke Shaw.
Greenwood and Shaw.
I am. I've had a no Ronaldo rule on FPL for quite a few years.
Wow. Okay.
So the great season where he sort of comes alive for United in 07, 08. I don't have him in my team.
Yeah.
So I was winning my mini league.
Yeah.
I had like a Fabregas centric team.
Okay.
And then there's that weekend where Ronaldo just goes ridiculous and beats up Newcastle. And I was the only guy in the team that in the league that just didn't have Ronaldo.
I
got decimated. And in the end, I basically relented, got Ronaldo in. But by that point in time, he was so expensive that I had to cheapen everything else.
And everyone owned him already.
And then everyone owned him already. So I could never win. And ever since then, I went, no more Ronaldo. he cost me an FPL league title once.
Yeah, it's a good policy. I'm for it. I'm anti-Ronaldo. But.
So as a rule, I don't have Ronaldo in my FPL sides.
I respect that a lot.
So right now, I played my wild card over the international break. Not because I wanted to.
Okay.
But because...
Interesting.
The situation involving the internationals at Brazil, Argentina, and South America was so confusing. I just went, all right, I'll play it now. I'll get everyone out. And I'll get some guys in.
Bit of a
nightmare. I finished, I've got 263 points overall. I finished game week 4 with 65.
Okay.
So the average this week was 57.
Yeah.
So, okay, fine. I had Steer on my bench from Aston Villa, part two of the Aston Villa thing. So if you have one goalkeeper for a club, you should probably have the number two is my thing.
Yep, classic.
I normally have Martinez. Martinez couldn't play. Put him out, put in Steer. Eric Dier got injured in the first 15 minutes.
I have Dier too.
Only 1 point. Luke Shaw got 5 points, got an assist.
Yep.
Newcastle. Shaw will probably be in my team for the entirety of the season.
I think Ronaldo will elevate his assist total. And
this is what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I think if United are going to keep attacking on that left-hand side.
Yep, exactly.
And Shaw's the best crosser and he takes the set corner kick. So I think you'll get quite a few assists.
I'm with you there.
Trent Alexander-Arnold was my vice captain. Got 12 points for me. Trent's going to be in my team for the entirety of the season, I reckon. You're going to be on a team unless you're injured.
Right.
Midfield. Pablo Fornals was my first sub. Came in, got 3 points. I thought West Ham would have a good game. Didn't quite happen.
Yep.
Diogo Jota, 3 points for Liverpool. I was kind of disappointed there.
Could have had 300 points, finishes on three. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Amari Gray, I brought him in with my wild card. Got 7. So I saw him at the start of the season.
He's killing
This guy's killing it.
Yeah.
And just before the international break started, I went, I'm gonna roll the dice. I'm gonna pull the trigger early and get him in now rather than wait a week to see his ovarian. So got the Murray Gray in, 7 points. Bruno Fernandes, 16 points, was my captain. Bruno Fernandes again, probably gonna be another guy I'm gonna have in all season, I think.
So you don't think Ronaldo will negatively impact his FPL returns, like the penalties and just the amount of shots and the ball hogging and that kind of stuff?
I am concerned about that on a footballing sphere.
Yeah.
I think at the moment, the way FPL works, you probably need to have one of Bruno Fernandes or Mo Salah.
Mm.
At this point in time in FPL, you should either have Mo Salah or you should have Bruno Fernandes in your team because De Bruyne is injured at the moment. And... like you want one heavy hitter midfielder.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, like the pulse of the FPL community has transitioned from that to you probably need Ronaldo, Lukaku, and Salah. That's the current thing.
Who else are you going to put in there? Four main defenders everywhere.
Damari Gray, and there are Livermento and guys like that.
I love
Connor Gallagher, etc. That's that. that's like the meta right now. I'm just, you know,
the meta is all about haymakers, man, where I like good footwork. I like jabs, little southpaw stuff.
This might not be the game for you and I.
I know. And Mason Greenwood got five.
Yeah.
So Greenwood is my, if Bruno Fernandes is the Batman of my midfield, then Mason Greenwood's the Robin.
Okay.
Up front, I got stung by Antonio.
Brought him in
for my wild card, and he finished with -1. Romelu Lukaku got 13 points.
Yeah,
Lukaku's going to be in my FPL.
At least you have Lukaku
all season.
You love Lukaku. Yeah, I know about you.
I've been calling him my son since 2017. Maybe earlier than that. Like if he scores, I tend to go, my son. I adore him.
My baby boy.
I've had him in my FPL since the West Bromwich Albion days.
Yeah. We're huge Lukaku guys. So
he's staying in there all season. On the bench, Martinez, 0 points. Christensen, 0 points. I really thought he'd play. Livermento got 6 points.
There you go.
Oh, missed out.
You're close. You're close to the meta. You're the no Ron. We'll see how that goes for you. I'm more on your side. I just severely dislike the man. And I just don't want him in my team, but it might go very poorly for us. But we just got to take that on the chin and just
we move.
And then just the last thing I wanted to ask about. So this book with Marcus Rashford, You Are a Champion. Tell me about it. I don't know much about it. I don't know how it came about. How did it come from your end? Did he text you? Did he DM you? He's showing it off right now for those not watching on YouTube. But where did this come from? Oh, the poster too. Nice.
Where I'm walking every time I'm on press conference.
Love it.
How did it come about? So I really quickly, right?
Yeah.
So we're talking Marcus Rashford scores a hat trick against RB Leipzig in the Champions League, and I'm on social media going, oh man, I love Marcus Rashford. He's amazing. and I have no idea that in 2 to 3 weeks, I'll be contacted being told, would you like to write his book? So I'd say, I mean, I've always had an interest in writing books and telling stories. So I initially went to, I don't have a formal journalism degree. And this is when all the comments go, I knew it. That's why it's crap. But, I went to uni to be a screenwriter. I went to make movies. I got my degree in creative writing and whatnot. So that's probably why all my articles don't read like traditional journalistic books, for better or worse.
You say things like unserious and move. And
I described Diogo Dalot as perfectly prominent. So this is all going on. And around about 2017, I... really good conversations with some book agencies who were interested in possibly representing me if I ever want to buy a book. I want to create a book.
Yeah.
And throughout 2017, 18, 19, and the parts, you know, to start of 2020, I had discussions about possible books I might write. Some were fiction, some were nonfiction. I had a talk with two professional athletes about possibly writing their autobiographies. One of them is a former Premier League winning football player. The other one is a former Premiership winning rugby player.
Cool.
And those didn't come about due to, you know, COVID happened and whatnot. So I got a phone call late October from my agent saying, we need to talk. I'm like, oh God, I'm getting released. And they informed me that Macmillan had a conversation with Marcus Rashford, and Marcus Rashford was interested in writing a book. And sort of a signal went round to a whole bunch of people saying, would you like to be put forward as a possible candidate to write Marcus Rashford's book? And I went, yeah, you know, I'm gone. You know, I'm sort of half eating a hot dog and not paying attention. I've got one thing on this. Like, yeah, go on, put a name in the list. Thinking, I think in the ecosystem of The Athletic, I'm probably the fourth most talented person to write a book for Marcus Rashford. Again, cue the jokes in the comments. But I thought, I'm not as good as this person.
Right.
To write this book. So I doubt I'll be better than these 50 imaginary people to write the book. So I thought, I'll put my name forward. I probably won't come to anything. And then I say 2 weeks later, I was midway through a podcast at Wrighty's house with Ian Wright. So yeah. I was midway through that and I get a phone notification. It's a little bit where I sort of look down and I make a strange sound effect. And everyone's looking, what just happened? I went, I'll tell you when we stop recording.
Yeah.
So I went, guys, look at my phone. I'm going to be writing this book.
Amazing.
So that was, you know, the announcement is made in November 8th. And then...
Incredible.
The book came about in 3 months, which...
Wow, that's really quick.
As a rule, don't write a book in 3 months.
It's yeah.
really hard. Your yeah. hair falls out and yeah. you get really stressed out.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. It was the best thing I've ever done in my life. Marcus was an absolute delight to work with. And it was really nice to just to talk to him all the time about not just football, but life, family, overcoming adversity, dealing with challenges, you know, your hopes and dreams and your favorite biscuits and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I've got a deep affinity for Marcus Rashford. And I'm really happy and humbled by just the reaction the book's gone out there. You know, every now and again, I check Marcus's Twitter feed and there's just all these photographs of
awesome,
really nice children going, I don't normally like reading books, but I've read your book. Or
incredible,
parents saying, oh, my kid only plays Ultimate Team, but they read your book. Or when schools say, we're going to give a copy of a book to everyone as they leave this year. I'm like, wow, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I wrote a book with Marcus Rashford and it's called You're a Champion. It's in stores now. I think it's pretty good. And quite a few people think it's pretty
incredible,
good.
Incredible, dude. Congrats. That's really amazing. That's awesome. First of all, thanks so much for coming back on. But also, where's the best place for people to buy You Are a Champion? And then also, where can people, you know, read your normal day to day work? Where can people hear you on podcasts, follow you on social media, all that stuff?
You can get You Are a Champion from any place you get. Yeah, all good bookstores in the United Kingdom, at least. If you are looking, if you listen to this international, the best place is probably to go to the Pan Macmillan website and get international sales there. I know a US edition will be coming in spring, cool. Which will be fun because we're going to, Marcus and I are going to write like an extra chapter in there as we sort of explain soccer to Americans.
Explain biscuits aren't the big fluffy things.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to trying to explain the League Cup.
Yeah, if you want to run anything through me, like I could be your Google Translate on this, you know,
sure.
Like, put this in NFL terms, put this in baseball terms so they understand. I got you.
Yep. Yep. So that'll be coming out sometime in the spring next year. I'm on Twitter at Anchorman616. Anchorman spelled A-N-K-A, my surname. Man, number 616. The 616, yes, it is a Marvel reference. So you can find me on social media there. I write for The Athletic. I cover Manchester United. So the idea at The Athletic is I write twice a week on Manchester United. And then once a week, I write a general column. Sometimes that general column is just me writing about Manchester United from a different angle. Sometimes it's me writing about FIFA. Sometimes it's me writing about a footballing documentary I just watched. Sometimes it's me writing about CT in what football. Sometimes it's me writing about, hey, have you seen how weird the Champions League draw is? So these are all things we've written about as well. So you can, you know, you can subscribe to The Athletic right now. I think we've got discount code. It's 33% off if you use the code theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
Okay.
That's cool. I've got a Manchester United podcast called Talk of the Devils, which is presented now by Ian Irving, who you might see on the Premier League broadcast if you're based in the United States. So it's me, Ian Irving, hosts Laurie Bookwell, who's the other Manchester United reporter for The Athletic, and Andy Mitten, who is our contributing writer and is the editor of United We Stand. All lovely, lovely blokes. I also contribute to Wrighty's House, which is which is Ian Wright's podcast where he hosts, and it's me, Ryan Hun, Musa Okwonga, Floyd Lloyd Hughes, Myra, and Jeanette Kwatche as well. Other than that, I'm just like asleep because I do all that stuff.
That's good stuff. Thanks. Thanks again. And good luck and everything.
Thanks,
buddy.
Talk to you soon. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.